Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for transaction of business. Draw nigh all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. We will begin this morning with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now, by order of seniority, as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephanie Stacy.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Pavick. Good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case this morning is State versus Roth. Counsel, good morning to you. Give me 1 second here. Is it Mr. Reeker?
It is, Your Honor.
Good morning to you, and you may approach. But before you begin, Ms. Vincent, you are also here this morning. Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Reeker, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning to the court. May it please the court, my name is Dan Reeker, and I represent Mr. Derek Roth in the appeal before this case. Before this court. Mr. Roth is presently incarcerated in the Diagnostic and Evaluation Center here in Lincoln, Nebraska, on a sentence handed down from the Dodge County District Court later in the year 2021. He is serving that sentence at the moment, and that sentence is essentially what this appeal is about. This is a very straightforward appeal, Your Honors, whether or not the sentence in this case was appropriate or excessive. The position of Mr. Roth is that this sentence given in this case was excessive, given what the court, pursuant to precedence from this court, should have considered when trying to decide
before
how to
sentence. Before you get too far into that argument, I'd like to ask you a question about the plain view, the plain error.
Yes, Your Honor.
Issue raised by the state. What was the offense that he was convicted for in Lancaster County that the court made this sentence consecutive to?
It was reduced charges of domestic violence, third degree, Your Honor, two class one misdemeanors. It was two of the same charges.
And you informed the court of that at the time of sentencing, is that correct?
We did, Your Honor, yes.
And that wasn't through a stipulation or anything. It was just you making a report to the court.
Correct, Your Honor. At the time when this court had ordered the updated pre-sentence investigation report and letter, my client hadn't been sentenced in those cases yet. He had pled. He just hadn't been sentenced yet. So I wanted to update the court as to what the outcome of that was, so the court knew to take that.
But he had been sentenced before he was sentenced in this matter.
He was, Your Honor. Yes, he was sentenced in Lancaster.
And that was to a jail sentence? Was that
the jail sentence of 200 days, yes.
Okay. So if with that situation, would it have been appropriate for post-release supervision to be imposed?
Your Honor, I believe that pursuant to the statute, and I understand the state raised this in their brief, I believe that pursuant to the statute, post-release supervision should have been ordered here. It was not. I don't know why that was exactly, Your Honor, but I don't actually contend that. We're not arguing that he should have been placed in a period of post-release supervision. I believe that he probably should have been since his sentence was running consecutive to the one that was in Lancaster.
And, that was not a felony offense or a high-level felony offense?
It was not. It was initially charged as a felony. Both of them were charged as felony offenses, and then they were reduced to class one misdemeanors.
Okay, thank you.
What did the record... or what does the record tell us about the trial court's knowledge of the conviction and sentence, the earlier case?
From the one in Lancaster County or the original case that the probation was based on, Your Honor?
No, I'm talking about, in this case, the trial judge purported to sentence consecutively to something that happened before. What does the record tell us about the something that happened before?
I do not believe the record has anything, to the best of my recollection, explicitly about what happened in Lancaster County, but for what I reported to the court. And then the initial charges that were brought against my client in the violation of probation motion that had been filed. So that's the only place where, to the best of my knowledge, any information about the underlying conviction was reported to the district court in Dodge County.
So in the pre-sentence report, if there was one in this case, there wasn't anything about at Lancaster County?
Not about the outcome. I don't remember there being anything specifically about the nature of the charges, period. No, I do not believe that the Dodge County District Court judge had any information about that case at all.
Thank you.
What do you think, oh, I beg your pardon?
Please.
Thank you. At the appellate level, and we look at the record, how are we to discern that which came before with confidence?
That is an issue in this case, Your Honor. What was prepared for the district court was simply the best of my recollection, the update letter that showed just what he did as far as the Dodge County District Court probation was. There was no additional information offered by the state in the motion to revoke probation other than the charges or anything additional. So the district court did indeed have did not appear to have sufficient information to enter the decision it did. Minimally, all the court took into consideration in its decision was just that he had these new charges and then nothing else surrounding.
Everybody seems to agree that's what came before.
Right.
Okay. But as I say, for record purposes, what are we to do?
I believe,
good enough?
I believe, Your Honors, because of what the information has before the court, I think all you can do is review the record that's before this court at this point in time, which does not include much of that information.
Thank you. So Justice Frydenberg has a question, I think. Beg your pardon.
So is it fair to say if we would not treat your comments as part of the record, we'd have, if we just were able to block that out and say that wasn't something we considered, then we would have nothing. So this would just be a case where the person was just sentenced on these charges alone, correct?
Just on the charges, not on the conviction, because there wasn't anything about
it. In the absence of any other information the court should know, the proper sentence would be to have post-release supervision.
Correct.
Okay.
Whose responsibility is, for example, if the Lancaster County information should have somehow been in the record, whose responsibility is that?
I believe, in general practice, in my experience, Your Honor, usually if there's an updated order or order for an updated PSI given to probation, probation usually will try and include that information. I don't know if they're required to necessarily, but that's my experience. It just did not happen here. I guess I'm not sure why, Your Honor.
Wouldn't there be an updated criminal history usually done? And would that show this conviction and sentence?
In all honesty, Your Honor, I think it depends on the county you're in. I appear in counties across Nebraska, and every county does a little different. That's just how the probation office in Dodge does the updates for them, is that letter explaining essentially what's just been going on with them.
Before we run you completely out of time, can we go back to the issue that you filed your appeal on, please?
So our position, Your Honor, is the law dictates that the court was supposed to take into consideration a variety of factors regarding my client prior to sentencing. Obviously, the specific issues as it relates to a conviction in Lancaster County, but also other things, including his performance, or his history, his education, his background, cultural impact, all the things that are listed specifically in I believe it's the Wilson case, Your Honor, and pursuant to the judge's statements at sentencing and also his sentencing order, none of those things need to be taken into consideration. His primary concern were these additional charges from Lancaster County. That single issue mitigating did not take into fact any other mitigating factors or circumstances. As I tried to outline, he was on probation for essentially 4 months longer than he was originally ordered to. He completed all of the domestic violence education, completed the additional alcohol education, had no further law violations since the foundation for this original motion to revoke probation, and served essentially at that point an entire 16 months or so of probation without having additional issues.
In this matter, did the sentencing court, did they consider any factors that we would consider improper?
I don't believe there's any factors that were considered improper, no, but there was not. All of the factors weren't taken into consideration, at least pursuant to what the court bases its decision on.
Is so, that because the comments that the court made during sentencing arguments, that's what you're basing that
it's
on?
The comments as well as the written order, because the written order also doesn't include anything about the foundation or the reasoning for the order. It's just here's the incarceration time you're going to
have. Haven't we and the Court of Appeals repeatedly declined to address that sort of argument, the premise of which being that if the trial judge didn't say it, the trial judge didn't think it. We've rejected that repeatedly, haven't we?
I believe that you have, Your Honor, but if the purpose of the standard for review of this is to try and plain error look to decide, if there's an appeal in place to determine whether or not a sentence is excessive, then we have to be able to look at the record as it relates to all of these issues to be able to do that. And if the record does not include those things, then there's no way to try and figure out from the, if there's no reasoning given, how the sentence can be excessive if it's just, this is what I'm going to do.
The sentences were within the statutory limits, aside from the plain error issue.
Correct, they were, yes.
And haven't we again repeatedly said abuse of discretion is the standard?
Yes, you have, Your Honors. However, if there continues to be the ability to appeal by court precedent a sentence to determine whether or not it was excessive, so if you can't, if there's no way to try and challenge that or figure out what the reasoning was for it, then essentially we're saying that you can appeal a sentence, but if you're in the statutory period of time, there's nothing you can do.
We've also rejected that, haven't we, in State versus Becker?
Yes, you have, Your Honor.
So,
I understand, Your Honor.
You have a little bit of an uphill climb here this morning.
I generally seem to have that, Your Honor.
are you asking that we require the sentencing courts to go through those specific elements or factors and articulate something to each one of those, or what are you looking for to improve the record?
Even if the court doesn't go through in great detail, at least in a written record, all of those different factors, minimally they should at least be referenced so there's an understanding of what things were actually taken into consideration by the court. If otherwise we're stuck looking at the single thing provided in this case, which was this previous conviction, there's no way to tell outside of that. If you want to actually challenge the sentence at that point, what else you could even look at. I believe my time is up. Does anybody else have any questions for me? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Maybe excuse me.
You may return to your bench there, or to your table. Thank you. Ms. Vincent, good morning to you. And you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Vincent, and I represent the appellee of the State of Nebraska. Lost claims to district court earned by imposing a sentence, having a record in this case, including a pre-sentence report. I see no basis for finding the district court abused its discretion by imposing imprisonment. However, I do believe it committed plain error by failing to impose terms of supervised release on the Class 3 felonies. Under Section 28-105, a sentence of imprisonment for a Class 3 felony must be followed by at least 9 months of supervised release. And whereas here the court fails to impose supervised release, Section 29-2204.027B states that it shall be the minimum provided by law, which again is 9 months. And originally I intended to ask the Court of Appeals to simply modify the sentence to include 9 months of supervised release, but then it occurred to me that the district court was required to impose conditions and to enter an order setting forth those conditions, as this court explained in State v. Phillips. And the corollary to that requirement, of course, is that Roth needs to be given notice of the conditions as well as an opportunity to object and to appeal.
Right. So, counsel, when a court is pronouncing sentence, the legal presumption is, unless the court says otherwise, that the sentence would be consecutive to any previous existing sentence, correct?
You mean the default rule, if he doesn't
say
anything? Yes,
that's the default rule,
correct.
Right? So in the we also have in this scheme with respect to post-release supervision, we have this provision that if the court is now imposing a sentence either consecutively or concurrently to another sentence, that would take this out of the realm of post-release supervision. You're familiar with that?
Yeah, higher grade felony, yes.
Provision. Particularly when they're not in the same court at the same time, how is a trial judge to know about whether there is a pre-existing sentence that would make it either subject to or not subject to post-release supervision in the case that the judge is then sentencing?
Well, I watched the arguments yesterday, and Mr. List was there on what we was going to be a similar issue. But at the time that question was asked, it occurred to me that I thought, well, probably the most appropriate place for that information to show up would be the pre-sentence report, because the court orders it, it gets it before sentencing, and probation does their investigation. And so I thought, just as Justice Funk pointed out, when they're going through and they're trying to find this person's criminal history and they're doing an update, or if they know, for instance, that the reason he's being violated here is because he was charged or he picked up additional charges in Lancaster County, that that probably ought to be done as part of that initial investigation, so that information is included in the pre-sentence report, not only for the district court to consider prior to sentencing, but of course that this court can review it after the sentence has been imposed and has been appealed.
So do we think that's happening in the real world consistently?
And I think it depends, as my opposing counsel pointed out. There is some variation. I mean, having looked at a number of pre-sentence investigations over the year, our pre-sentence reports, there is some variation. You get more or less detail depending on what county it is, and sometimes it varies depending on the probation officer that you have preparing the report. Sometimes that information is included. Sometimes you get little factual recaps underneath some of the prior criminal history, even if it's older and not necessarily being considered for purposes of this appeal. So it really just depends, and I don't know if that's something that needs to be done at the probation level, that maybe they, you know, there needs to be some sort of a rule that is enacted or passed so that that becomes something that needs to be part of the pre-sentence investigation. You know, I'm not really sure, because otherwise if you just have the parties making representations to the state. I mean, here we had the benefit of the case number. We knew what county it was. We knew what the case number was. So I was able to go in on Justice and look it up myself. He was charged with two domestic violences with priors and terroristic threats, all of which were class 3A felonies. So it wouldn't have, even if he hadn't pled to reduce charges, still we would still be okay here with the term of supervised release.
I think I'm still back on my question to opposing counsel in terms of the record, which of the previous sentencing. So far we've seemed to have stipulations or representations to the court, mm-hmm. or pre-sentence investigations. There could be a case without a pre-sentence investigation, right? Or am I wrong?
Sure, no, and that occurred to me too. Like if you have an instance where somebody gets charged with maybe a lower level felony and they want to waive it, proceed to sentencing, and
right.
then that
right.
situation.
And I'm really looking, frankly, you know, put yourself in our shoes, with the confidence with which we will know that which came before.
Sure, and for that, I don't really have a good answer other than the default rule that Justice Castle mentioned. I don't really see any advantage to a defendant who maybe has something pending out there that may impact the sentence, because it's going to run consecutive if the court doesn't know about it, whatever, you know, whatever it is. But in terms of whether we get it right in this case, should there have been supervised release, that is a more difficult question. And that's why I think it would be best if probation were able to include that information as part of its investigation, because it seems like they would have access to that or a better way to do it. And of course, I would assume they have access to justice. You can always print off those orders. I did it here.
Does the state, as the prosecutor of the case, have some burden to put the record before the court?
Well, I don't think so. First of all, I think the defendant's in the best position to know. So, and it's not like an enhancement where we're trying to enhance this person. I mean, the goal here is to provide the court with as much information as we possibly can to make sure they get it right. And so I don't see that this is necessarily the state's burden. And like I said, I think it seems like it's more of a pre-sentence investigation type function, that's probably where it belongs.
So it's the court's burden.
Well, probation. And I guess probation is an arm of the court. I don't know if I refer to it as a burden necessarily.
If all the parties who are in the courtroom at the time of sentencing, let's say this defendant has went through seven counties on a crime spree and they've all been sentenced, mm-hmm. does the state, the defense attorney who happens to be in that county, or the defendant, are they who's in the best position to know what they've been sentenced with?
The defendant. I mean, because you also have situations where somebody, his counsel in Lancaster County was not the same counsel they had in this case. And so, you know, it depends if you can lose counsel. And if we don't become aware of it, for example, he's getting the motion to revoke was based on the conduct that occurred in Lancaster. And it came shortly after that conduct occurred. I believe he picked up the charges in that case were related to or occurred on February 10th. And February 18th, and then the state came in on February 27th and filed this motion to revoke. So I suppose to the extent the state is aware that there are some other charges out there, it too could follow up on that. But it just seems to me like that's kind of in probation's wheelhouse. And, you know, maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe I don't understand the process well enough.
Would it be beneficial for the defendant to share that information?
Well, like I said, if...
If I got convicted of seven felonies in seven different counties and I got the maximum, I may not be inclined to tell this judge that information if he doesn't already know it.
Sure. I mean, maybe not. But as far as, you know, whether it's not going to affect whether your sentences are consecutive or concurrent, and who wants a term of supervised release if you're already going to be on parole for something else? So I see very little incentive for a defendant to withhold that information. I mean, other than what you said, getting tagged and potentially a higher sentence in the event that the court uses that information against you.
I'm a little concerned about the suggestion that probation is in the best position.
Sure.
Because the pre-sentence investigations are done well in advance of sentencing. The report is usually delivered to the judge at least a week before sentencing,
right,
so that the judge has time to review it, so that the attorneys have time to review it, supplemented if that's necessary.
Sure.
So it is not the most current iteration of the defendant's criminal history.
That may be. And typically, you know, defendants get interviewed, too, and so I'm sure that that some of that stuff comes up. But you're right. There is going to be a bit of a lag between the time that the pre-sentence report...
Always.
Right, it is prepared. But then, if we're talking about who's in the best position to know, I would submit to you that it's the defendant. Because I don't think the state, how is the state going to know that some of these other things are happening? If I'm a prosecutor in this county and my only concern is what's happening in this county, and I've got my own caseload, what am I supposed to do with these defendants before sentencing? Am I supposed to get on justice and just run a statewide search to see if I can rustle up anything else on him? I mean, you know, I'm not entirely sure how they became aware of the charges in Lancaster County in the first place. I don't know if that's because law enforcement has access to that information and they are able to say, okay, I know this guy that I'm just having contact with is on probation, and so they alert someone, and that's how... I'm not trial counsel. I'm not a prosecutor, so I'm a little bit of a disadvantage there because I'm not sure exactly how that process ordinarily works, but clearly they learned about it here because that's what the motion to revoke was based on.
But so is the best practice for a sentencing judge at the time of sentencing to look at the counsel and say, is there anything I don't know? Have you been sentenced lately? Is there anything?
Well, I'm not sure how else we fix this. You know, I mean, I guess you could ask that. I mean, presumably the parties are being candid and probation is done. I mean, there's only so much you can do. If something gets missed, it gets missed. I mean, it happens. Unfortunately, this isn't a perfect system. I think we do the best that we can. And I'm not sure exactly who is going to be in the best position to catch everything that is potentially out there.
Under our statutory scheme, does the sentencing court with a lower level felony have discretion whether to impose post-release supervision?
No.
And in the situation we had here, was the court informed of the level of the Lancaster County charges?
Not that I recall. And I looked at
if the record indicated the defense counsel informed them, would verbally inform that sentence, would you disagree with that?
I wouldn't disagree with it if it's in the record. My notes from the BOE just show the case number. And so, I mean, the court could have certainly accessed that information if it knew in advance. But again,
let me go to the next step. On the basis of working on the assumption the court knew, what was the reasoning the court gave to not impose post-release supervision in this case?
Because it just thought it would be a waste of time. And I mean, I understand the sentiment there. He's thinking, well, I don't have any reason to believe that you're going to fare any better on post-release supervision than you did on probation. And frankly, I'm just going to send you imprisonment and we're not going to waste any more time or resources doing that. But no, the court doesn't have discretion to do that. I mean, it's
but if there's court. if the this court or the court of appeals has no ability to review a decision like that this court made here, does that in effect make it discretionary?
No.
If it can make that, but there's no way to actually address it later.
No. I don't see how that's possible. I mean, I understand the lack of information, but it's like you're basing your sentence based on what is before you.
I'm speaking in ultimate effect of that. If this court has no ability to overturn it, even if we realize or everyone knows that the court was informed correctly.
Sure.
And this court has no ability to overturn that. That court's basically been given discretion to choose if they impose it or not, haven't they?
No, I don't think you have discretion. I mean, basically, you've got two class twos and a misdemeanor in this case. And under the statute, of course,
that's
you
fine.
Have to...
You've answered the question.
Okay, sorry. I mean...
May I suggest that if the defendant in this case had not taken an appeal, the issue of plain error would never have been raised?
That is correct. The only way that we know that, but you know what? That happens with a number of sentences. I can't tell you how many times since in post-LD 605, I've had to point out plain error. So I don't know how many sentences have gone on uncorrected, but especially with this default provision in Chapter 292204, well, if we don't enforce that on appeal, who's going to? I mean, it's by operation of law, you get this supervised release, but who's going to enforce it? If he hadn't filed an appeal in this case, he would have walked out of prison and presumably not done anything. He certainly wouldn't have been subject to revocation because there are no conditions. So that's basically what we're stuck with. I mean, sometimes I think mistakes get made, and if they inure to his benefit and he doesn't appeal, well, then that's a boon for him.
Thank you.
Now, if there's nothing further, I will submit it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you for your presentations today in State versus Roth. You are excused.